Good morning, Connecticut, and to our friends across the Sound. It's John Voquette, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Thanks for tuning in to the award-winning For the People, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Hey, did you know that only about half of state residents know that certain plastic items can be brought to grocery or retail stores to ensure proper recycling? Plus, few residents are aware of the various types of plastic bags and wraps that can be recycled. So we're going to go right to the source. We're going to go to the program coordinator for the DEEP's WRAP program. WRAP stands for WRAP Recycling Action Project. Then we're going to invite parents, educators, medical, and law enforcement professionals from around the state to a special workshop called Not My Kid, Not My Community, which is being presented later this month by the Newtown Parent Connection to help all of our communities turn the tide against Connecticut's opioid epidemic, which took more than 900 lives in the state last year. And we'll close with a replay of an early February visit with Marrakesh to learn how the agency is assisting individuals as young as high school juniors who face barriers to securing employment and who have a goal of participating fully as contributing members of our community. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Voquette, right after this invitation from the Connecticut Experiential Learning Center. Attention, parents of teens and tweens, you're welcome to join a Lunch and Learn with Alan Kasdan, director of the Yale Parenting Center. It's coming up Tuesday, March 28th at 12:30 at the center on School Street in Brantford. You know, parenting teenage children can present a unique set of challenges, and this presentation will include topics that will help parents understand this period of development and, as importantly, what might be done concretely to help the adolescents and ease the challenges of parenting. You're invited to come out, and if you'd like to register for more information, you can just go to ctexperiential.org.
Okay.
So as you heard in our introduction, we are also going to be talking about a really important environmental initiative that has come to Connecticut. As somebody who is a chronic and very enthusiastic reusable shopping bag owner and user, I couldn't have been happier to hear that state officials and recycling advocates have launched a new campaign to increase the recycling of plastic bags and wraps, noting that a survey finds most people in Connecticut are not yet aware of where and what to recycle. So we have turned to a very appropriate guest, the WRAP coordinator for the Connecticut Department of Energy and Environmental Protection. She is an environmental analyst. Cheryl Baldwin is with us on the line. Cheryl, thanks for joining
us. Thank you for having me.
So tell me just a little bit about yourself and when the whole issue about plastic bags really started to kind of hit home with you and kind of inspire you to get involved to try to help educate people.
So I've been with the department for about 8 years, and I work in the source reduction and recycling group. But I have worked on a number of materials management efforts in other states as well. When I first came to Connecticut, I actually worked for Save the Sound, and I did a lot of beach litter cleanups. And there, of course, you do find a lot of plastic litter, including bags and other plastic film. But now that I'm working with the agency, we have, of course, curbside programs as well as maybe your transfer station where you can bring your mixed recyclables. And a lot of people will put plastic bags in there. And sadly, that is a contaminant. And when you talk to materials recovery facilities across the state, plastic film and plastic bags are the number one contaminant, and it causes a number of different problems. So I'm excited that we have a solution.
Well, that's great. Can you help educate me and other people? I mean, I know right now that when I go out on my front lawn to let my dog out, or I'm looking out of my second story bedroom or living room window, I'm looking at two big shredded white flappy plastic bags stuck in my trees in my front yard. And I just can't imagine the type of environmental trauma that one of these bags could cause a bird or a sea animal or other animal if it gets wrapped up in it. But can you kind of validate some of the detriments of so many of these plastic bags just kind of trundling and blowing around in our neighborhoods and parking lots?
Sure. So litter is definitely an issue, and there are a number of different environmental concerns associated with litter. When you have plastic bags and other materials, they have a chance of getting into our waterways, which is very tragic. It can cause a lot of problems for animals and different animal habitat. So in terms of trying to spin it around as a solution, one, we shouldn't be littering. We should try to figure out how to not throw away things onto the ground or in our waterways. But in terms of recycling, I love this program because it does give us an alternative that we can bring it to our local grocers, or we can bring it to a local retailer that's participating in the program. You had mentioned you like to reuse bags, and I want to remind people that of course, the first thing to do is to use reusable bags or not to take a bag. But many of us need bags. And if we can't reuse them for your dog or your pet waste, and maybe you can't reuse it in another way, this program gives us a great alternative.
Great. So let's talk about what finally helped move Connecticut into scope for this fantastic plastic bag and wrap recycling initiative.
So we're in partnership with the American Chemistry Council. The WRAP program is something that they coordinate nationally. They have worked with a number of different cities and communities, and we're actually the third state in looking at how can we implement this campaign or this program on a statewide level. In some ways, it's a pilot. They're experiencing and having new efforts, if you will, come about as a result of partnering with us. We are promoting return to retail, but we're also exploring other opportunities. In Connecticut, which apparently is different from other states where they have worked, we have a lot of municipal transfer stations. And they're not just where we bring our trash or our recyclables, but it's a really great community, you know, place. I don't know if you personally have a town transfer station, but it's often where you meet friends, you get to hear what's going on in town, and you get to do a lot more than just bring your trash. And a lot of municipalities want to try to develop a drop-off program for plastic film. So while we are very excited to have partners and retailers, it's also exciting that some municipalities are trying to figure out how to serve their residents with drop-off programs as well.
So I guess the next logical question is, to help inspire people, if it's not just about reducing these unsightly bags blowing around and helping in so many ways to protect the environment and animals and sea creatures, there is also the positive outcome of how these bags can be reused when they're recycled en masse. Can we talk a little bit about how the recycling process works and what comes out of the other end that makes these recycled products more sustainable?
Sure. So I'm going to back up a little bit. We're talking about plastic bags, mm-hmm. but we're talking about more than just bags. We're talking about plastic film. And a lot of people are like, what do you mean, like film, like a movie? No, it has to do with sort of saran wrap, Ziploc bags from bread bags or containers. If you get bulk toilet paper or paper towels that wrap around it, all of that is plastic film. If you were going to go into a grocery store or a retailer and you have that container up in front of the store that says, we take your bags, they actually take bags and other film. And if you're going to do a little mini audit and look at all the different materials that are in that container, you would find only 25% is grocery bags.
Oh.
The rest of it is everything else. And I think it's one of the reasons I love this program is that it's more than just bags. It is so much more material. And so if you think about all the materials we could be capturing and diverting or recovering, there it's endless about how many materials. I was surprised that you could do cereal bags. That was the big thing. We apparently eat a lot of cereal at my house. Mm-hmm. So we were very excited. And so when you look at all that film is then can be made into new products. Those products aren't necessarily made locally, but there's a number of different companies in the country that make lumber and different swing sets or different materials where they're using that plastic. So I think it's great. I think it's a great program because it gives us an alternative as opposed to us saying, don't put your plastic bags in the recycling, you should put them in the trash. It gives us a great way of recovering that material, and then somebody else, like Trex is one of our partners, uses that to create new products.
Okay. So, folks, if you just joined us, we're talking, we're wrapping. Yes, we're wrapping with the wrap coordinator here in Connecticut. Cheryl Baldwin is an environmental analyst with DEEP, and we're talking about the recently launched wrap program. Connecticut Wrap stands for Wrap Recycling Action Project. And we've got a few more minutes with Cheryl on this subject before we move out for the day. So, Cheryl, for the growing number of communities here in Connecticut that are utilizing, or at least the larger ones, with the single stream recycling where everything just goes into one bin, is that an alternative right now instead of having to be mindful of collecting every little plastic shopping bag and scrap of plastic wrap material and remembering to stuff it into our reusable shopping bags so that we can bring them to the grocery store and drop them in the lobby? Can we just, for communities with single stream recycling, can all this just go in with everything else into the bin?
Definitely not. You definitely want to bring them back to the grocer or the retailer, or if your municipality is collecting them at your transfer station. You do not want to put them in the recycling bin. You don't want to put them in your mixed recyclables because they gum up the works. So I think I mentioned earlier, they really are the number one contaminant. First, it causes safety concerns. We have 5 materials recovery facilities. I'm sure a lot of people might have seen pictures or videos. You know, it's a bunch of conveyor belts and things are getting pulled off by magnets or getting blown off. Well, there's also a manual component to all of our facilities. Sometimes they might suck up bags by vacuum, but often what happens is you have staff, you have employees that are trying to pull those bags off before it goes further into the system, because in the system they get all wound up in the gears. They get all wound up in that material. And what is very sad is that they get so wound up and there's so much material in there that during breaks and lunch periods, staff has to actually, when the machines are turned off, jump into those systems and manually cut and rip that material off before they can start working and operating again.
Okay.
So think about it in terms of plastic bags cause safety concerns to staff and employees that work in the recycling industry. And then you also reduce the value of that material. So we talked about Trex and other companies that want to make new products out of this plastic. If it goes through a MRF facility, the value of that material is so degraded or there's no value at all. Whereas if we recover it and bring it to a retailer, that value is retained. And so we're not causing safety concerns and we're not devaluing the material when we bring it to the store. But you definitely do not want to put it with your mixed recyclables because you're just going to contaminate and cause safety concerns for the staff.
Very good. Well, I learned a lot in this brief conversation, Cheryl, and very excited once again to know that there are some alternatives now. It's interesting that according to surveys, of Connecticut residents, only around half of them were aware that certain plastic items can be brought to grocery or retail stores to ensure proper recycling. And fewer residents are aware of the various types of plastic bags and wraps that can be recycled. So I thank you for giving us the information, and I'd like to turn residents over to a much broader resource. Plasticfilmrecycling.org is a website that they can go to learn more. And hopefully, as this program grows and becomes more successful, we'll be able to visit with you again to learn a little bit more and get an update on how things are going, if you're up for that. In the meantime, we thank you for your great work. Cheryl Baldwin is the WRAP coordinator here in Connecticut and environmental analyst for the Department of Energy and Environmental Protection. Thanks again, Cheryl, for being on the program. Well, Newtown is like many other towns and cities in Connecticut in terms of the impact that the current opioid epidemic is taking on its children and residents. And Newtown, like many other communities, refuses to become another statistic. So in their fight against drugs and during a 3-day community event that begins March 27th, a regular guest on our program, Dori Carolyn, who's founder of Newtown Parent Connection, is going to be welcoming the nation's top authorities on this issue, former Drug Enforcement Administration Special Agent Robert Stutman and the Honorable Jody Debrecht-Swatalski, to empower and educate parents, students, school administrators, law enforcement professionals, and medical professionals with the most current scientific research and knowledge available, with the goal of protecting families, communities, and work environments from the greatest possible health issue of our time. So let me once again thank our guest, Dori Carolyn, for kicking off the show. And she'll be back after we talk to her two honored guests for a few minutes to remind you that this event is happening in Newtown, but it is open to anyone who's interested in finding out more. Dori, thanks for having us at your brand new and beautiful headquarters here in Newtown on the former Fairfield Hills campus.
Thank you, John, for having me on the show today. We are honored to have Jody and Bob Stutman on our program, presenting a comprehensive program on the current drug trends in the United States. They're going to discuss the history of substance abuse and the paradigm shift in the United States and how this epidemic differs from previous generations. You will hear about the new synthetic drugs that are plaguing our country. We urge you to come listen and learn together so that we can empower and protect our families, our community, and our children from this terrible epidemic.
So while the community and medical law enforcement professionals, educators, and others are going to be interacting with Judge Jody and Agent Stutman, there is a key event that's coming up for anyone to attend, and that's happening on Tuesday, March 28th from 7 to 9. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, we're excited because they will be in the school system, in the middle school system, on Monday, the 27th of March, giving assemblies, doing groups with the children, and also with the administration. On Tuesday, they will be in the high school, and then they will be meeting also with the administration and having a focus group with the kids. And then we're going to open this up to the community. John, I feel so strong that this is one of the key components, because what normally happens in with the forums that we have is we get the parents of the kids that are in the throes of addiction or dabbling with drugs. That proverb that it takes a village to raise a child is so true, because it's not only the kids that are in the throes of the addiction, but the children that are clean and sober that are in the same school system, that are playing sports with the kids that are dabbling, that are driving cars while they're high, that when they need money for drugs, they're breaking into people's homes. So it is a community problem, and we all have to band together and support each other and embrace each other so that we can make things better, not only for our children, but for our grandchildren.
And sadly, you are one of this inordinately expanding statistic, having lost a loved one yourself to illegal drugs.
Yes, John. And after Brian's death, and when we did do the rebound with Parent Connection, I vowed to do everything in my power to not only share my story, but to embrace people and prevent other families from suffering this terrible devastation that my family has gone through.
So it's interesting that the organization that is a major sponsor of this event is also going to be providing some product during the program, and those that sponsor is called Solo Technology Holdings, and they've created a product called the iKeep, smartphone-enabled personal safe designed to safeguard prescription medications, and five of those safes are going to be raffled amongst the first 100 people to sign up for the Not My Kid, Not My Community evening program. So we're going to break and give Dory a few minutes now, and we'll come back after we speak with our guests this morning, Judge Switalski and Agent Robert Stutman. So Dory, hang tight, and we'll talk to you in just a few minutes. So we've joined Judge Jody Debrecht Switalski on the phone to get started with our two esteemed guests this morning who we'll be welcoming into Newtown in a couple of weeks. So Judge Jody, thanks for joining us. And if you would please give us a little bit more of a broad overview of what this Not My Kid, Not My Community program is going to encompass, and let us know who it's designed to reach and how it's all going to roll out.
Great. First of all, thank you so much for having us. I can't even begin to tell you how excited Bob and I are to be up in Newtown here in, what, just a couple of weeks. So, Not My Kid, Not My Community. One of the most comprehensive school education programs that you're ever going to see, and I would submit to you probably one of the most unique. So we're going to do about five different presentations during the day with the schools where we speak to everyone, and we kind of, you know, set the stage and rev it up, and we earn the kids' trust. And they vet us, then we vet them, and then we spend some time with them alone. I don't let anyone go in there, not a counselor, a teacher, an administrator, a janitor. I don't care. Get out. That's our time to really, really let the kids have a voice. And they want to have a voice. And by then, we trust one another, and our credentials often get us a long way with them. But once we start vetting the information that they have, it builds trust. Then we'll talk to the administrators. We'll talk to anyone that wants to come throughout the afternoon, the teachers. We'll talk about education and different patterns and different things that we're seeing and starting to identify within the school system and within the community. And then we'll do evening presentations. Those are open to just about anyone, and we'll certainly appeal to anyone. And the one thing that I just want to encourage your listeners to understand is, A, love is not going to fix this problem. Okay, we all love our kids, but we really need to understand from their perspective, and we need to get good information ourselves as parents and educators and teachers and judges and law enforcement and mayors and you name it. Just, you know, there's not a single profession or individual that really is exempt from the ability to make a difference on this. And kids have a lot of information about drugs, just most of it's wrong.
Well, it's interesting with the both the local, regional, and national, perhaps even global attention that this opioid epidemic is now getting in the media. It's kind of surprising for me to hear that parents
are still shocked to learn what's going on in their own homes and their own neighborhoods. But I guess that that just kind of plays into that whole combination of stigmatizing the individuals who are trapped in this situation and the denial factor that I guess is still a huge barrier toward getting to the goal of helping these younger people.
You are exactly correct. And, you know, we really do have to stop sticking our heads in the sand about this. And if you come to the presentation, you'll understand I made a mistake as well. So I'm not, Bob and I are not here to preach or talk down to anyone. We really want to be a part of the solution. And individuals that start using and abusing opioids, and we might as well talk about benzodiazepines as well, your Xanax and Alprazolam, because they're killing almost as many people as the opioids, or they certainly are often, you know, married to the opioid. You'll get a script for both of them at the same time. They function. They do really, really well. You know, these are the captains of the football team, you know, the high school cheerleader, and I don't want to create, you know, gender stereotypes here. You know, it's Chess King isn't exempt from this either. And so, you know, there are any number of different examples in our country, hundreds of examples in our country of people that have been extremely successful until they fall off the cliff. And oftentimes when we get there, as, you know, we see in law enforcement and certainly in the courts system, it's tough to get them back. So that's where prevention and good education, evidence-based education, becomes critically important. And Bob and I are very prepared to give that to you all.
Well, without giving away the whole program, in view of the fact that we only have a few more minutes with you, can you just give parents that are listening this morning a couple of tips about how they can initiate the conversation to sort of kind of break that barrier between themselves and their young people if they have a worry or a suspicion or solid evidence that they're involved in some sort of drug and or alcohol issue?
The first thing that parents should know even before the conversation takes place, respectfully, is that they need to lock up their meds. Get a good prescription safe. Get a lockbox. Get a bank safe. Kids won't use it if they can't access it, and that's something that every single one of us can do today. With regard to the conversation and the dialogue, it cannot be punitive. All of our children have a time and a moment where they are most vulnerable, and we know our kids. So, for example, my daughter is a reader, and at night when she crawls into bed and read, that's the perfect time, the best time, for me to sit next to her on her bed and say, hey, can we talk about this? So, for example, you know, the non-judgmental approach, or just saying after you come to the community presentation and you get the information, you know, nosh on that a little bit, massage it, digest it, try to really, you know, reconcile the information that we're going to give you, and then go to your kids and just say, I love you. Lead with that always. I love you. I am afraid. I went to this presentation and the things that I heard scared me. Can we talk about this? Have you seen these things? You know, that's the It's very, very simple, and even in all of the research and the literature, really having that non-judgmental, very honest, very vulnerable approach will prove invaluable. Your kids will learn to trust you. And, of course, there are going to be times where there's going to have to be consequences, but let's build the trust first and just tell them you love them and you're afraid for them.
Great. Lots more information forthcoming from both our current guest and the guest we're going to pick up with, Bob Stutman, in just a couple minutes.
Absolutely.
You can get all of... I'm sorry, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to warn you. He's a firecracker.
Okay.
Get ready.
Well, we want everybody to get the full impact of this beneficial workshop being sponsored by the Newtown Parent Connection. Everyone within the sound of my voice is invited to the Newtown Middle School on Queen Street for this presentation of Not My Kid, Not My Community. If you'd like more information or find out how to register, you can go to newtownparentconnection.org. And I want to thank you, Judge Jody Debrecht-Switalski, for coming on board and being part of what we hope will be a new chapter that begins with your arrival here in Connecticut in just a couple of weeks. So thanks so much for being part of the program. We're going to take a quick break and pick up the conversation with former DEA agent Bob Stutman of the Stutman Switalski Group, coming into Newtown for this fantastic program. Stick with us. We'll talk more about it right after this. Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots causes that would love to have your support. And you can learn about many of them through Love CT. Just go to our radio station website, hit the event guide tab, and click on to Love CT to help the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. And if you work or volunteer with a state nonprofit, visit the site to apply for one of our 2017 Love CT Foundation grants. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. In recognition of Older Americans Month this May, the Agency on Aging of South Central Connecticut is looking for individuals in our community who will celebrate their 100th birthday in 2017 or who have already passed this milestone. This year, the agency is focusing on how older adults are redefining aging through work or family interests by taking charge of their health and staying independent for as long as possible. So they're hosting a special luncheon on May 3rd to honor and celebrate the lives of these centenarians. To request an invitation for a centenarian you know, just visit aoascc.org. Now we're joining Bob Stutman on the line, the other half of this dynamic duo that's going to be coming up to Newtown in a couple of weeks for Not My Kid, Not My Community. We hope folks from all over Connecticut will turn out to hear this dynamic presentation, especially in view of the fact, Bob, that, as you know, the Connecticut State Medical Examiner just released the 2016 statistics on drug-related deaths, and while it doesn't seem possible, given the numbers of increased deaths over the past few years, we're seeing another 25% jump in opioid deaths, and 155% increase in deaths related to fentanyl. So let's talk a little bit about how we can reverse this trend.
Well, you're absolutely right, John. And to tell you the truth, I'm more surprised than anybody. Jody and I have been talking about this issue for years. It was not until about 2 to 3 years ago it became a subject of public discussion. And we honestly thought that once the public learned about it, the numbers would go down. But unfortunately, they continue to go up. Most of the problem still starts with kids getting pills from medicine chests. I understand they then go on to heroin and fentanyl, etc., but it is originally starts with an opioid problem, very often mixed with Xanax and drugs like that, that move up. So I'm not sure that most parents understand that. Jody and I love working with high school kids. We do about 140 presentations a year. Our passion is working with high school kids, and when we talk to high school kids who have a drug, opioid, substance abuse problem, I will tell you the two couplets we hear when either Jody or I say, "How did this start? Why?" The two couplets we hear the most, John, are sports injury and wisdom teeth. And they look us in the eye and say, nobody ever told us this stuff was addicting. And sometimes it makes you want to cry. These are not bad people, bad kids, bad doing bad things. They get sucked into a disease, and it is a disease just as much as diabetes is. And then we don't have the time, the money to cure the disease. And it continues to get worse.
Well, your partner was a very influential and groundbreaking judge still is in Detroit. You are a former DEA special agent who was instrumental in helping to bring down the Colombian cartel. And at one point, you were even targeted for assassination. How does your experience in the DEA transfer to the support that you're trying to provide for parents and today's youth?
I was head of the New York office when the crack epidemic started, and I was there for most of it. So So I saw firsthand what a drug epidemic can do to communities, to adults and kids, etc. And I learned one lesson. Law enforcement will never, ever solve the drug problem. And we continue, unfortunately, to depend primarily on law enforcement, who are incredible guys and women trying to do a job, but they don't have the ability. It is the lesson I learned. You prevent young people from using it before they ever start using it. And remember, most kids start using now drugs between 12, 13, and 14. So it's a very young age. We have to teach them how to say no. We have to keep them so they can't get the drugs. And I don't mean locking up dope peddlers. I mean locking up the pills in your medicine chest. And then we have to have treatment available for those who have this disease. Until we adopt that three-legged stool, in effect, it's going to continue to get worse. I, like you, John, was shocked at the Connecticut numbers. I grew up in Rhode Island, so I'm very familiar and very close to Connecticut. I was shocked by those numbers, and my prediction is I will be surprised if they don't continue to at least stay where they are or possibly go up, because we're not handling it right as a country, not as a state, as a country.
Well, Judge Jody indicated that locking up your prescription drugs is a huge step to take in preventing a child or one of their friends from accessing them and getting started. But in your case, I'd like to ask, what should a parent or loved one do if they suspect substance abuse and have evidence of it? In other words, it's a pretty good bet that the kid is past the experimenting stage or just dipping into the medicine cabinet.
Well, first of all, I'd like to reconfirm what Jody said. Kids can't use them if they can't get them. So we have to do two things. We have to not stop the prescription of these drugs, but make sure doctors know what they're doing, how to handle them, and make sure their patients know the side effects. We have to get parents to lock them up. If you suspect your child has a problem, you get in touch with an expert, and your local mental health society can put you in touch with somebody. And I always say the words you want, if we're talking about your kid, are somebody who is certified in adolescent substance abuse treatment, and also a dual diagnosis person. Very often this is tied to depression. Very often kids are self-medicating. A study done in the Journal of the American Medical Association this year said kids do not use opioids, the common Vicodins, Percocets, etc., to get high. They use them to assuage their emotions. So very often this is self-medication, so you need to find an expert. I will also plug a book that is not my book, so I don't get any money for it, and I didn't write it. I think one of the best books ever written for parents that are faced with the question you just posed to me, as well as how do I prevent it, is How to Raise a Drug-Free Kid by Joe Califano. It takes all the science and puts it into terms that parents can use.
Excellent.
But the bottom line is you have to pay attention. The biggest problem, I think, John, is that folks who live in the suburbs in Connecticut think this is an inner city minority problem, and it isn't. It is all of our problem. It is, and a study came out last week. It is worse in rural America than it is in the big city, and suburban America is very close to that. So it is all our problem. It is white more per capita than any other ethnic group. It is middle income more than any other ethnic group, and it is devastating our country.
Well, there's lots more to hear from our guests this morning, Mr. Stutman and Judge Switalski, when they come into Newtown. And we hope folks will turn out for the public portion of their program on Tuesday, March 28th from 7 to 9 p.m. at Newtown Middle School. NewtownParentConnection.org is the website to go to register. If you'd like to learn more about the great work that Judge Jody and Bob are doing, you can visit them at the Stutman SwitalskiGroup.com or just Google Bob Stutman and you will find him. Bob, we appreciate you coming on the program and giving us just a little sample of what parents, educators, law enforcement, and other medical and other youths will be learning at the Newtown event. And we look forward to seeing you then.
Great stuff. And once again, we want to thank both the guests for coming on and talking with us for a few minutes on the phone ahead of this event coming up on March 28th. So we're back with Dori Carolyn, who's the founder of the Newtown Parent Connection, which has started to spread its love, knowledge, and information to other communities. So, Dori, I'm gathering that you would not only you're not only happy to be taking your work and mission to other communities in Connecticut, but you'd also be happy to hear from anyone who's listening about perhaps establishing a parent connection chapter in their town.
Yes, John. We're always here to help other communities get their programs started. We have worked with the New Canaan group that just started about 6 months ago. And because one of our facilitators is very active in the Fairfield area, we have expanded and we have a Wednesday night program for the Hope and Support Group on Beach Road at the Congregation Church every Wednesday night from 7 to 9. Anyone, no matter where they live, no matter what state they live in, can at any point contact us for information, to talk, to share, to cry, whatever the case may be. It's always so comforting to know that someone really understands what you're going through. So we are open at any point to talk to people and to help people get programs started. You can reach us either through the website at NewtownParentConnection.org. Our phone number is 203-270-1600. We take calls 24/7, and I want to take this time again to thank Solo Technology Holdings, the creator of iKeep, for being so generous and paying for this program that's coming to Newtown and the surrounding areas. This parent community forum is open to anyone, therapists, law enforcement people, parents, caregivers. Come out, get the knowledge, and let's work together to make Connecticut a better place.
And that event is Tuesday, March 28th from 7 to 9 p.m. at Newtown Middle School. We want to thank our guests, Dori Carolyn, founder of the Newtown Parent Connection, as well as former DEA Special Agent Robert Stutman and Judge Jody Debrecht-Switalski for being part of the program today. Folks, we hope to see you out in Newtown on the 28th. And if you would like more support, information, or perhaps to replicate one or more Parent Connection initiatives in your town, please get in touch with them. Dori, let's just get the website one more time.
NewtownParentConnection.org.
We're wrapping up this morning with an organization that's been part of the award-winning For the People for each of the 28 years that I've been doing it. We are pleased to be talking with David Vargas, representing Marrakesh, providing residential, employment, support, referral, and advocacy services to individuals with disabilities and people with similar service needs to assist them in exercising their human rights as citizens and contributing members of society. I find it most interesting, as we close the show today, that Marrakesh, our last guest on the program, was founded in 1971. And going back to our opening segment with the Council on Environmental Quality, that was also founded in 1971. So we've got a couple of 70s acts here on the show this morning. David Vargas, thanks for joining us, and welcome back.
Thanks for having me, John.
Yeah, so a lot of exciting stuff. We got about a little over 10 minutes to squeeze it all in. And it really is all about enabling people to be more self-sufficient, more self-sustaining, more confident individuals with disabilities. So we've got a couple of programs that we want to talk about. So let's start with the career exploration that you're going to be doing with junior and seniors in high school.
Sure. So we are working with about 15 different schools and supporting upwards of 70 students currently to do career exploration and kind of go through the work of what kind of education training is required for jobs that they want to go into, should they know where they want to pursue. And for those students who may have never worked before or really don't have a confident idea of what they want to get into, it's using software, talking, and PowerPoints to kind of give them the edge in finding what they want to do. And the goal with that is by doing the classroom trainings first and knowing what the groundwork for education, training, et cetera, is, we're going to be hopefully tying them to an employer in the area who is actually doing a job similar that they want to pursue, and kind of give them an out-of-classroom experience so that they can hear it from someone who's actually doing it and get some of that insider knowledge through an informational interview or a job shadow, just something that we cannot provide because we don't have the experience that the employer that we match them to does.
Mm-hmm. And tell me a little bit, based on your experience, and you know these young people and many of the folks that come to the agency, how far can this exposure in the at the high school level take an individual with some sort of a developmental or other disability in the community? Could this be the beginning of a lifetime career that delivers them into this self-sustaining, tax-paying kind of lifestyle?
You know, it's funny. What we're finding, and Mayor Harp of New Haven actually makes a good reference to it, we're becoming more like a knowledge-based economy where what you can kind of put out there in terms of experience, in terms of training, skills, personality, is really what's going to get you in the door. And even when it's in the door, the competitiveness of everyone who's applying is really high. So while we only have maybe half of the school year to do this exposure, it's absolutely a great stepping stone. We're giving them printouts of job titles. We're giving them listings for apprenticeships in the area that they can pursue. And by giving them the job shadow and the informational interview, not only are we supporting their social network by giving them a contact that they can refer to, but what I think is also really cool is that come summertime, a lot of these employers that we're meeting and having the kids meet may very well be interested in summer work or volunteer opportunities or internships that should the students pursue. Is always going to be valuable experience. And we have seen, even from last year when we did our work-based experience, a lot of the employers are just very hungry to give the information to the students. And we've actually had some students from the summer get hired, even though we were doing it more as a work exploration versus trying to place them for work. So I think that we're a great start. I know the schools do a lot of this work with their students, but I think we kind of bring a different kind of mindset, being that we are all about employment versus some guidance departments that kind of focus more on after high school with education. And I think that by being in their corner and giving them job titles, actual people they can reference, it's just a great stepping stone for them.
Great. And how about for individuals who are out of high school or at least 18 and over?
So the goal for this Level Up program, which is the title of the program, the students who are going to be graduating, so mainly seniors and are going to be of age, actually have the ability to continue working with the Department of Rehabilitative Services and other community resource providers like Marrakesh to explore further careers and actually find work. So once this is done in the summertime, they have the ability to continue services at the adult level. Now, for those students who go that route, it's very similar to the adults that we're currently working with who seek us for employment training or for job placement. So these adults, not necessarily ones right out of high school, are deemed more work ready. So they have experience in their past, you know, solid skills that would make them competitive for employment. But for one reason or the other, give it the competitiveness of trying to find work, maybe they've had a couple of years off and the recent work experience isn't there. Our goal is to put someone in on site to do the work along with the resume and their personality to kind of say, hey, like this person has done it, can do it. You have a need. And we know that based on what they've done in the past and what you've seen, they'd be a great fit. And instilling that confidence in the employer not only allows our person to get a foot in and gain employment, but it really supports the employer and the local organizations that we put people to work because they know based on what they've seen and the feedback from us and from their other staff that this person really is about doing the work, can do it, and really just wants to continue to do it.
Well, Marrakesh is far from the only agency that we have had on our program who works to assist individuals who may face additional challenges to find a place in the workforce. And I have to say the one thing, although the programs and the people differ, the things that we hear after the fact is that once these individuals are exposed to employers who up to that time, up to that moment, may never have really seriously considered bringing in these special members into their workforce. But once they do, they keep doing it, and it becomes almost a new branch of their workforce, and it tends to be permanent.
Absolutely. We have a lot of great partners that we're working with. Burlington Coat Factory has been wonderful with not only allowing us to do evaluations, but also having people that through what we call working interview, which is essentially an evaluation, but for placement rather than just to explore whether they can do it or not, have hired and continue to hire our people for work. And the staff, especially a shout out to the one in Orange, has been extremely, you know, reliable with us, great communication. But it's like you said, John, once employers kind of see how the program works, they see the person, I think they kind of move away from that stigma and that hesitation of, well, can they do it? And with us in the person's corner kind of showing how and doing it in a in-your-face kind of way where you can kind of just see everything you need to see, it takes away a lot of that, like, that scaredness of, well, what if the resume doesn't really match to what the person can do? We're kind of giving them everything, and then we also follow for 90 days. So once we actually place someone for work, it's not like we just kind of dust our hands off and move on to the next person. We do check-ins with the employer. We get feedback. We stop in on site during shift to make sure that things are okay. And we do a lot of contact with both the participant that we're working with and any other community organizations that person's tied to because it's a team effort. We don't want employers to think that we're doing it for us. We don't get commission. I do what I do, and I know that a lot of the staff here at Marrakesh say the same thing, is because we love people. We want people to embrace their human potential, and work is one of those really unique things that gives someone a sense of fulfillment that nothing else can. And so by giving the employer the confidence in knowing that the person we put is a great fit and letting them see it firsthand, it also gives them the fallback that should the person may not, you know, be 100% what they need, that's okay. It's a learning process for us too, but we go forward with the intent of having our person be the best fit for the job and allowing that work experience for the employer to see as our justification for it.
And if word of mouth and proof on paper isn't enough, you've got the 12-week funded opportunity where the employer virtually takes almost no risk.
So let me just very quickly, that's actually for our junior and senior program. Okay. There's a big push by the state to make sure that high school students are more prepared. And so they have extended periods of them for being able to work. For our more work-ready, for the adult program, we do have extended supports, but we usually see anywhere between 40 and 80 hours as enough time for an employer and for our participant to know whether or not it's the right fit. The goal being that any training that needs to happen during those times can happen, and we usually set it up on a part-time basis at first so that we're not overwhelming an employer or a participant with 40 hours straight, and by giving us a longer window of time to see behaviors and make sure that tasks are being recognized and done completely, again, just gives the employer a little bit more confidence so that they can see both short-term and long-term of their person's abilities in the job that they're doing.
Excellent. We don't want to let you go, David, without reminding folks that if they're hearing something inspiring and they want to be able to try to help support Marrakesh, they are welcome to come to New Haven. That is up at the Peabody Museum on Thursday, February 23rd from 5:30 to 8 p.m. There'll be a wine tasting. You'll get to see all the incredible stuff at the Peabody Museum in New Haven. And if you'd like to find out more about getting tickets to the wine tasting on February 23rd or any of the programs, or if you're an employer and you heard something today that inspires you to make a call, Marrakesh is Marrakesh. Their website is Marrakesh Inc. I-N-C. MarrakeshInc.org. Check them out. And Dave Vargas, thank you so much for filling us in on these latest and greatest programs with this organization that is doing so much to help transition individuals as young as juniors in high school to the likelihood of productive and sustainable careers and lives here in Connecticut. You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host and do not necessarily represent the views of Connoisseur Media. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a community calendar item relevant to the audience and communities we serve, you must make a request for consideration in writing via email to me at john.vocat@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file, reflecting the full scope of our station's responsiveness to critical issues in the communities we serve, can be viewed upon request weekdays during normal business hours in the New Haven area at 440 Wheelers Farms Road in Milford, and for our Hartford stations at 869 Blue Hills Avenue in Bloomfield. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. This is John Vocat, Director of Public Affairs for Connoisseur Media. Join us again at this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. Don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab at our radio station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.